Welcome to So Ordered, where we create audio readings of SCOTUS decisions to make them more accessible to the public. At the time of creating this podcast, the Supreme Court of the United States does not release audio of the court's decisions. Our mission is to make it so the public can be better informed on decisions of the court by using AI to generate audio of written opinions. The case before us today is Flowers Foods versus Brock, docket number 24935, decided May 28, 26. Before reading the opinion itself, here is a brief summary of the case and the questions presented. Flowers Foods is a large producer of packaged baked goods, with bakeries in 19 states. To get its products to market, the company relies on franchisees who buy the rights to distribute Flowers' products in specific geographic territories. Angelo Brock is one such franchisee. He serves the Denver area, picking up Flowers' products from a warehouse in Colorado and delivering them to local stores, all without leaving the state. In 2022, Brock sued Flowers, alleging that the company had underpaid him and other distributors. Flowers moved to compel arbitration under the Federal Arbitration Act, but the district court denied that motion and the Tenth Circuit affirmed, concluding that Brock fell within Section 1 of the Act, which exempts contracts of employment of workers engaged in interstate commerce. The question presented was, are workers who deliver goods locally that travel in interstate commerce, but who do not transport the goods across borders or interact with vehicles that cross borders, transportation workers engaged in foreign or interstate commerce for purposes of the Federal Arbitration Act's Section 1 exemption? The court held, a worker who transports goods on an intrastate leg of an interstate journey can qualify for the Federal Arbitration Act's Section 1 exemption without crossing state lines or interacting with vehicles that do. Justice Gorsuch delivered the opinion for a unanimous court. As a reminder, the audio is an AI-generated reading of a published opinion of the Supreme Court of the United States. The voice you will hear has been synthesized to loosely resemble that of the justice that wrote the opinion. All tone, inflection, pacing, and emphasis are produced by the AI model and should not be attributed to any justice. The text itself has been lightly adapted to aid in the creation of the spoken delivery. This is a project to attempt to make court decisions more accessible to the public, and any substantive changes during the reading are completely unintentional. Please visit www.supremecourt.gov to read the opinion published by the court. You can find a link directly to the opinion in this episode's description. As the audio is AI-generated, you may hear some audio glitches, including odd pronunciation, odd phrasing, or repeated words. We're continually working to improve our process to reduce these, and we appreciate you sticking with us as we improve the listening experience. The following is the opinion of the court in Flowers Foods versus Brock.
The Federal Arbitration Act requires courts to enforce many private arbitration agreements, but not all. Section 1 of the Act provides that nothing in the law shall be used to compel arbitration in disputes involving the contracts of employment of any class of workers engaged in interstate commerce, 9 United States Code, Section 1. This case is the latest in a line posing questions about the scope of that exemption. Flowers Foods Incorporated is one of the nation's largest producers of packaged baked goods. Some of its familiar products include butterscotch crimpets, jumbo honey buns, and Wonder Bread, which it promotes with a 95-foot-tall hot air balloon and a parade float called the Wonder Ship. From its bakeries in 19 states, Flowers distributes its products across the country. To get its products to market, the company depends in part on franchisees who buy the rights to distribute Flowers' products in particular geographic territories. This case involves one such franchisee, Angelo Brock, who serves the Denver area. Brock picks up Flowers' products from a warehouse in Colorado and delivers them to local stores, all without leaving the state. In 2022, Brock sued Flowers in federal district court, alleging that the company had underpaid him and other distributors in violation of various federal and state laws. In response, Flowers filed a motion asking the court to send the dispute to arbitration. In support of its motion, Flowers observed that the Federal Arbitration Act, FAA, generally requires courts to stay or dismiss cases when the parties have agreed to resolve their disputes by arbitration rather than litigation. and Flowers argued that rule applied here because Brock had signed a distribution agreement promising to arbitrate any disagreement that might arise between himself and Flowers. Ultimately, the district court denied Flowers' motion and, in an opinion by Judge Phillips, the Tenth Circuit affirmed. The Tenth Circuit rested its decision on 9 United States Code, Section 1. While the FAA requires courts to enforce arbitration agreements in many circumstances, Section 1 contains an exception. It provides that nothing in the statute shall be used to compel arbitration in disputes involving contracts of employment of seamen, railroad employees, or any other class of workers engaged in foreign or interstate commerce. Reasoning that Brock belonged to a class of workers engaged in interstate commerce, the court concluded that it lacked authority to compel the arbitration Flowers sought. To be sure, the court recognized Brock does not cross state lines himself or interact directly with those who do. But, the court held, those facts were not dispositive. Instead, the court said, what mattered was that Brock's intrastate route formed a constituent part of the interstate journey of Flowers' goods from out-of-state bakeries to their intended destinations at retail stores. Flowers petitioned for certiorari. In doing so, it asked us to resolve a single question, whether someone can qualify as a worker engaged in interstate commerce under Section 1 if he never crosses state lines and never interacts with vehicles that do. We agreed to take up that question. In recent years, we have had occasion to address the scope of Section 1's exemption no fewer than 3 times. In each case, we have rejected efforts to cabin its reach. First, in New Prime Incorporated v. Oliveira, decided in 2019, we held that the contracts of employment Section 1 embraces include contracts governing independent contractors, not just employees. Then, in Southwest Airlines Company v. Saxon, decided in 2022, we held an airline worker who loaded and unloaded cargo fit within Section 1's exemption, even though she did not fly planes or otherwise cross state lines. Finally, in Bissonnette, we held that a worker can fall under Section 1, whether he is employed in the transportation industry or some other, so long as his work plays a direct and necessary role in the free flow of goods across borders. Make this case the 4th. Before us, Flowers' sole theory is that, to be engaged in interstate commerce for purposes of Section 1, a worker must either cross state lines or interact with a vehicle that does, say, by loading or unloading the goods it carries. That theory is incorrect. We have already held in Saxon that Section 1 does not require workers to cross state lines. Nor, we now add, does Section 1 turn on a game of tag with vehicles that do. At least sometimes, a worker who transports goods on an intrastate leg of an interstate journey can qualify for Section 1's exemption without satisfying either of those criteria. Start with the statutory text. Section 1's exemption applies to workers engaged in interstate commerce. When the FAA was enacted, to engage meant to take part in something or to be employed or involved in that thing. Black's Law Dictionary 661 3rd edition, 1933. See also Webster's New International Dictionary 725, 1913. To embark in a business, to take a part, to employ or involve oneself, to devote attention and effort. And interstate commerce meant traffic, intercourse, or the transportation of persons or property between or among the several states of the Union, or from or between points in one state and points in another state. Black's 101. See also Cyclopedic Law Dictionary 548 2nd edition 1922. A shipment from one state to another under a contract for continuous carriage is interstate commerce, even as to so much of the journey as is within the limits of a single state. Nothing in those terms requires an individual to cross state lines or interact with a vehicle that does. Interstate commerce includes transporting products between points in one state and points in another state. That involves not just crossing state lines, but intrastate activity too. Though a continuous carriage may begin in one state and end in another, much of the journey can take place within the limits of a single state. And at least sometimes a person can take part, be employed, or be involved in that continuous journey without leaving a state or touching vehicles that do. Some hypotheticals help illustrate the point. Imagine customer A in state A enters a contract to purchase a truckload of butterscotch crimpets from company B in state B. Company B makes the crimpets in state B, but the contract requires company B to deliver them to customer A's headquarters in state A. So, company B hires a driver to take the crimpets from the bakery in state B to the headquarters in state A. All agree that the driver in a case like that is engaged in interstate commerce. Now imagine instead that company B hires three drivers to make the delivery. Driver 1 takes the crimpets from Company B's bakery right up to the border between states A and B. He then gets out of his truck, unloads pallets of crimpets on his side of the border, and drives home. Driver 2 then picks up the crimpets, drives 10 feet across the border, puts the crimpets down again, and heads off. Finally, Driver 3 picks up the crimpets in state A and delivers them to Company A's headquarters. Who was engaged in interstate commerce? On Flowers' account, only Driver 2 would be. Neither Driver 1 nor Driver 3 crossed state lines or touched a vehicle that had. But that cannot be right. Each of the drivers played a direct, active, and necessary part in ensuring the crimpets got from a point in state B, the bakery, to a point in state A, the headquarters, as the contract required. This hypothetical, really, is hardly a hypothetical at all. This court confronted similar facts more than 150 years ago in the Daniel Ball, 1871. There, a steamer transporting goods on Grand River operated entirely within the limits of the state of Michigan. The steamer did not run in connection with, or in continuation of, any line of vessels or railway leading to other states, but was employed in transporting goods destined for other states, or goods brought from without the limits of Michigan and destined to places within that state. Still, the court held, the steamer was engaged in commerce between the states. As the court put it, the fact that several different and independent agencies are employed in transporting the commodity, some acting entirely in one state and some acting through two or more states, does in no respect affect the character of the transaction. In other words, the steamer was engaged in interstate commerce even though it stayed in Michigan, and even though it did not come into direct contact with a vessel that had crossed state lines. Other cases are to similar effect. In Rerich v. Pennsylvania, decided in 1906, we held that a Pennsylvania salesman who picked up goods shipped from out of state and delivered them to their final destination was engaged in interstate commerce with no indication that he ever left Pennsylvania or interacted with vehicles that had. In Rhodes v. Iowa, decided in 1898, we held that a railroad agent who moved a package from a train platform to a freight warehouse entirely within one state could, in certain circumstances, be part of interstate commerce transportation. And in Norfolk and Western Railroad Company v. Pennsylvania, decided in 1890, we held that an intrastate portion of an interstate railroad business was immediately connected with interstate commerce. We could go on. Flowers's only real answer is to observe that these cases and others like them interpreted the Constitution's Commerce Clause, not Section 1 of the FAA. Fair enough. We do not mean to suggest that the scope of Section 1 is coterminous with the scope of the Commerce Clause as it was interpreted at the time of the FAA's adoption in 1925. After all, Section 1 exempts from the FAA only contracts of employment of transportation workers. Circuit City Stores, Incorporated v. Adams, decided in 2001. And the statute speaks of transportation workers engaged in interstate commerce, while Congress sometimes uses broader terms like affecting or involving interstate commerce when it wishes to regulate to the outer bounds of its authority under the Commerce Clause. At the same time, we can hardly blind ourselves to what this Court's cases said, both before and around the time of the FAA's adoption, about what it means to be engaged in commerce between the states. We think cases using the same language as Section 1, or formulations very close to it, offer probative evidence of what an ordinary person at the time of the FAA's enactment would have understood its terms to mean. To be sure, and as Flowers highlights, we have held that the phrase engaged in interstate commerce in Section 1 denotes a direct, necessary, and active role in moving goods across borders. We reaffirm as much today. But we do not see how any of that dictates the rule Flowers seeks. As the hypothetical above and cases like the Daniel Ball illustrate, individuals can sometimes be direct, necessary, and active participants in moving goods from points in one state to points in another state, without crossing state lines or interacting with vehicles that do. Unable to persuade us that the FAA incorporates its cross or tag rule, Flowers hints at other reasons why Brock might not qualify for Section 1's exemption. Flowers observes, for example, that it conducts its business with Brock through a distribution agreement it has with an independently operated company he owns. And indeed, some lower courts have found that relevant when assessing whether a contract of employment exists sufficient to trigger Section 1's exemption. Compare Flylo Falcon, LLC v. Amazon.com 2024, holding Section 1 inapplicable to a contract between two business entities, with Silva v. Schmidt Baking Distribution, LLC 2025, holding Section 1 applicable to certain agreements with single-employee corporations. Flowers also contends that Brock orders, purchases, and takes title to Flowers' goods before selling them to local stores. And, again, some lower courts have found facts like those relevant when assessing Section 1's reach. See, for example, Rittman v. Amazon.com 2020, focusing on whether a product has reached its intended destination under an interstate contract. Immediato v. Postmates 2022, holding that interstate couriers fulfilling takeout orders made within the state are not engaged in interstate commerce. The trouble is that, while Flowers discusses these facts in passing, it does not ask us to decide their legal significance. Instead, it ventures all upon one cast, asking us to adopt a bright-line rule that an individual can never qualify for Section 1's exemption unless he crosses state lines or interacts with vehicles that do. And whatever other limits Section 1 may or may not contain, we do not see how the statutory text can support that one. The judgment of the Tenth Circuit is affirmed. It is so ordered.